Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday. It's April 18th, 27 degrees and blue skies here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Giboy. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Thursday or happy Friday Eve to you. After our chilly start that we have this morning in the Wasatch back with temperatures starting off in the 20s, temperatures will be steadily warming as we go through the day today. And we'll see afternoon highs pretty similar compared to what we saw yesterday. It just might not necessarily be maybe as warm with daytime highs, maybe 1 to 2 degrees cooler than yesterday. But with the winds that won't be as strong, it might actually feel like it's a touch warmer than what we saw yesterday afternoon with the cold front that worked its way through. We'll see a daytime high of 49 degrees in Park City, while we'll sneak into the upper 50s down in the Heber Valley. Mostly sunny skies. Should be a really nice day if you do want to go ahead and spend some time outside. Then tonight, it's mostly clear skies with the overnight lows only heading for the low and mid-30s. So it will be a little bit warmer tonight compared to what we're waking up to this morning. There's going to be a weak disturbance that brushes by the southern half of the state tomorrow. And for us in northern Utah, that's just going to result in maybe a little bit more cloud coverage and roughly a 10% chance of a stray shower, mainly in the afternoon. But I think most of us get through the day mostly on the dry side of things. And we will also start a warming trend by tomorrow afternoon. Should be in the middle 50s tomorrow afternoon in Park City, which is just a little bit above our seasonal average, and we'll hold on to partly cloudy skies with the overnight lows falling back into the mid-30s on Friday night. Then we start to see the warming trend ramp up as we move into and through this weekend. Both days, Saturday and Sunday, likely bring mostly sunny skies, with the daytime high climbing into the upper 50s on Saturday with an overnight low in the upper 30s on Saturday night. And then on Sunday, should see a daytime high in the low 60s in Park City. So if you want the full-on spring feel, looks like this weekend will deliver across the Wasatch back. And thankfully, it's a nice gradual warm-up, so we won't be warming up too much, but spring skiing will be in full effect. Then as we turn the page into early next week, we're likely not going to see any changes. Monday, Tuesday, into Wednesday, each day bringing a mix of sun and clouds. And each day we'll see a daytime high in the low to mid 60s. At this point, Tuesday might be the warmest day with a daytime high coming in at 65 degrees. Overnight lows will be close to 40. And we will introduce at least a slight chance for seeing a few showers on Wednesday. Forecast models are somewhat optimistic that as we move towards the second half of next week, we could start to move into an unsettled pattern. But seeing as though that's still more than a week away at this, or roughly a week away at this point, it's just something that we'll keep an eye on for now. So today, cool and sunny, then we'll be warming up as we go into this weekend, and really not too many changes into early next week. Just feeling like spring across the Wasatch back, Leslie.
Okay, Thomas, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Park City Recreation Director Ken Fisher in to discuss the process for the new PC Mark pools and a city park community center. Later on, Mountain Trails Foundation Executive Director Laura Anthony with a look ahead at this year's trail building and maintenance plans. Midway City Council members have heard residents' concerns about local wastewater treatment ponds, and as KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports, they say they want to find ways to treat the problem, just not mask the stench.
This spring has brought public outcry over the state of affairs at the Heber Valley Special Service District. Some Midway residents say the nearby treatment ponds have made them sick, and in late February, at the county's invitation, a state toxicologist held a meeting to hear their concerns. Meanwhile, the county has proposed putting the HVSSD in a special zone called an industrial protection area. At Midway City Council meeting Tuesday night, City Planner Katie Villani described public feedback about the proposal.
So I think a lot of the comments that I've heard is that the county might be looking to do this to basically protect against lawsuits related to people getting sick or something like that.
The designation would help guard against nuisance complaints, but it would not shield the district from liability for true health and safety concerns. Still, the Midway City Council decided the timing was poor given the amount of controversy surrounding the district lately. Councilmember J.C. Simonson said he'd rather see the district commit to solutions for the odor first, before creating an industrial protection zone.
It's not just a mild nuisance, so that's my issue, is that categorization. It's only going to make it harder to argue, but I don't know that it's super responsible to take that approach right now.
Council members agreed they wanted to delay adopting an industrial protection area while they discuss ways to build back trust in the HVSSD. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, the Sundance Film Festival may be leaving Utah. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports on that.
The Sundance Institute said Wednesday it will consider a new festival location in the United States for 2027 and beyond. Its existing contract with Park City, which has hosted the festival for 40 years, expires after 2026. According to a press release, Sundance wants other localities to make their case for hosting the annual festival. Sites that meet specific criteria, such as venue, space, and airport proximity, will be invited to apply for final evaluation. Sundance said it intends to make a decision about relocating either near the end of this year or the beginning of next year. Festival officials have noted Park City's challenges with affordability and accessibility. Former Sundance CEO Joanna Vicent hinted change may be coming at a Park City Council meeting last year. Vicent said the Institute was struggling financially due to the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. Sundance has cut staff and eliminated venues from the festival in recent years. Park City Mayor Nan Worrell said Wednesday the city is committed to keeping the festival for another 40 years. Worrell said, quote, "We will work collaboratively with all our state and local partners on next steps." The 2023 festival generated $118 million in economic impact for the state of Utah and drew over 80,000 attendees, according to a Sundance report. The Institute said one of the many possible outcomes is the festival could remain in Park City and Salt Lake. They noted that Utah is uniquely positioned in this process given the event's extensive history. The Sundance Board, which includes founder Robert Redford, is involved in the selection process. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, a new report from the University of Utah shows just how much of the state's ski industry contributes to the local economy. Utah's 15 ski reports reported a record-setting 7.1 million visitors during the 2022-23 record snow season. That's up 22% from 5.8 million the year before. Summit County accounted for nearly 40% of those visits. Utah's ski industry supported more than 25,000 jobs and generated nearly $2 billion in non-resident spending that season. According to a new report from the Kem C. Gardner Policy Institute, about 1% increase, that's about a 1% increase from the previous year. Utah residents spent $694 million, that's a 60% jump from the season before. Summit, Salt Lake, and Weber counties collected a record combined $666 million in transient room tax that winter. Utah has accounted for about 44% of ski resort visitors, with 2% coming internationally. California sent the most out-of-state visitors at 8%. The average visitor is 48 years old and stays 6 nights, according to the Institute's analysis, with an average nightly lodging rate of $655. Looking at daily spending, skiers and riders spend the most on food, followed by lift tickets, retail purchases, and lodging. Ski Utah spokesperson Allison Palminter says the organization will calculate visitation numbers for the 2023-24 season once the resorts close. Well, the majority of car crashes happen on 10% of Summit County roads. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that officials are working on ways to fix those areas.
The Mountainland Association of Government's first road safety open house was in Kimball Junction Tuesday. The regional planning organization mapped out the most dangerous roads across Summit, Wasatch, and Utah counties using the last 5 years of crash data. In Park City, most crashes happen along Kearns Boulevard, but the most severe crashes happen at Marsac Ave and Deer Valley Drive. In the Snyderville Basin, crashes are concentrated at State Route 224 and Ute Boulevard. Landmark is particularly bad for pedestrians. Downtown Colville has the most dangerous roads in northern Summit County, and 10% of roads in the region have 75% of the severe injury or fatality crashes. That includes West Hoytsville Road to the south and Echo Dam Road north of town. It's a similar story in South Summit, where Camas's Main Street has the most crashes, especially entering and exiting town. MAG also saw spikes in severe crashes along State Route 32 in Peowa. MAG senior planner Robert Allen says consultants compared hotspots to countermeasures recommended by the Federal Highway Administration.
So it was kind of a take their list of countermeasures and see what works best in specific locations that we've looked at, in addition to working with UDOT and the local communities to say, does everybody agree this would be, or this set of countermeasures would be the correct one in this situation.
The Kimball Junction Open House was the first in a series of open houses across Summit, Wasatch, and Utah counties, where MAG asks residents about its ideas to make roads safer. Relatively few locals participated in MAG's survey about when and why they feel unsafe on the roads. Of the nearly 800,000 residents of the three counties, 433 responded. Still, one remedy was clear. 97% of respondents said increased enforcement would make them feel safer. About half reported feeling unsafe on the roads right now. Angie Kell and her husband were some of the only people at the open house Tuesday who weren't county staff or candidates for elected office. They're avid cyclists from Glenwild. They also drive like everyone else, and they agreed speeders should face consequences.
Predominant amongst them are people commuting, hurrying up to get to work, tourists who don't know any better that, you know, this is our town, please slow down.
When MAG finalizes a list of safety improvements, local government leaders can then apply for federal grants to fund changes on the ground. Head to mountainlandsafestreets.org for more information and to see when MAG is holding an open house near you. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, Wasatch High School entrepreneurs were awarded $40,000 at the recent InvestNets competition. KPCW's Amber Johnson reports that the cash came with lessons in paying it forward.
10 students blazed new trails and wowed judges with their business ideas in a celebration of innovation at the high school's 7th annual InvestNest. Student Emery Weiniger helped organize the event.
It's basically like a Shark Tank style competition where we recruit some of our Wasatch students to come and present their entrepreneurial ideas to an audience. And the winner gets $10,000 and second place gets $7,500 and third place gets $5,000. And the rest of the top 10 get $1,000.
That's big bucks for aspiring business moguls. And this year, almost $40,000 was awarded, thanks to the support of local businesses and individuals. Monday's winners will advance to the state competition April 29th in Provo. InvestNest was founded in 2018 by J.W. Davies, Brad Allen, and James Ballstead. Over the past 7 years, more than $450,000 in grants have been awarded to help students grow their businesses. More than 40 of those startups are still in operation. Students pitched their business to a panel of four judges, rattling off their company metrics with average income, return on investments, and competitor analysis. Coleman Childs with Cole Films took the top spot. Ty and Boston Barnes of Pickleball Court Surfacing placed second, and Jed Kelly's window tinting business Kelly Customs came in third. Coleman started his film production business 9 months ago and already has 33 clients. When asked about the impact artificial intelligence will have on his industry, he acknowledged AI tools can make editing easier, but said they will never be able to capture the emotion of the human experience. The second place Barnes brothers said the grant money will give them more opportunities to expand while giving back to the community. They recently helped Eric Thompson, a high school football coach with severe ALS, who was scammed out of $10,000 by another pickleball court company.
So we went in and did his entire court for free with help from our suppliers and also a lot of donations from crowdfunding we did. We love doing things like this because it just gives more meaning to our business and just drives us to be more successful.
Success comes in many forms, as these young entrepreneurs will learn on their journeys to build and fulfill dreams. Amber Johnson, KPCW News.
Ken Fisher in the studio with us. As we reported, the Park City Council has set aside $15 million for a new City Park recreation building and another $6 million for an update for the two pools at the PC Mark. Ken Fisher again joins us now in studio. Thanks for being with us.
Morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's just start with what the proposals are, the most expensive being that $15 million community center to replace the current recreation building, which is located near the children's playground and the basketball courts in Park City.
Correct. That's the location, and we're looking to, let me just back up. Currently, we use that building in the summer for our summer day camp. And we also license Miners Hospital. And we have a license for, I think it's about 97 kids. This new facility will enable us to have 150 kids. So really increase the capacity for our summer day camp, which is a critical need in the community as it provides activities for kids during the summer when school's out from 8 in the morning till 6 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah, so would it be used for anything else?
Oh, certainly. We will, when that building is done, that will be used on a year-round basis. There's some pretty large spaces in there that will enable us to move some programming out of the Mark and free space up at the Mark. An example for that would be, you know, some archery and tumbling classes that we hold in the gymnasium. So by relocating those, that will actually free up some critical indoor space for us.
Yeah, so where are we in the process? Has this been approved? I mean, the council, again, has set aside money for it.
Funding has been approved, but we don't have construction drawings. It hasn't gone through the Planning Commission, so I would say it's in process. We are in the schematic design phase now and, you know, looking for feedback from the public. We are looking to start that project a year from this fall.
All right. So is $15 million enough?
It seems to be an adequate budget from our preliminary price estimates.
Okay. So the earliest you could start, you believe, would be a year from this fall?
Correct.
25.
Yeah, right. These things just take a long time to plan. And then also we want to try to coordinate it so we would have the least disruption to our programming.
So would it be built in the same location?
Pretty much. It does get pushed closer down to the playing field. So a little bit further, I'm going to get my further north than its current location. And we also, you know, obviously we replaced the basketball and the volleyball that's there, and we replaced the playground. But we do move the playground over by the Poison Creek Trail side, away from the road.
Okay. And in terms of how long it would take, I mean, it would be start in the fall build. That's kind of a weird start, yeah?
Yeah, so we would start in the fall. It would build all through that next summer. So we would lose one season of our summer day camp being there. And then it would we would shoot to be done in October of 25.
All right, so would you not have summer camp, or would you just find another place for it?
We would just relocate it. It is a key program for us, so I can't imagine we wouldn't do it. We would, you know, again, be creative, similar to when we renovated the old racquet club. So we would, look to potentially use some school space, use space at the Mark. Maybe we use Miners Hospital a little bit more.
Okay. So what have we got in terms of square footage today, and what would this new building be?
So the current building is about 4,500 square feet, and we're looking at a building that is about 15,000. So significantly bigger. The nice thing about the proposed building is that it's all one floor. So it will be completely, obviously, ADA accessible. We won't need an elevator. And it will also, one of the things we've been cognizant of is making sure that it is, I'll just say, sort of subservient to Miners Hospital. You know, Miners Hospital's sort of the iconic building when you come into the park, and this will be pushed further away from it, as well as only being one story.
Yeah, and I was curious about that. I mean, why not build a second story? You're going to need bigger camp. You're going to need more employees. Why not put some workforce housing in a building there?
That would be something, you could do. Obviously, that drives the cost of the project. It's already $15 million. Those are all options. But we really, at this point, think a one-story, all one level will work really well for the community.
Okay. Let's move on to the pools. We've got $6 million budgeted for this. And we're talking about replacing both pools?
Yeah, correct. So our lap pool was built in 1990, and our leisure pool was in 2003. And anybody that's been a user of those facilities are aware of some significant maintenance issues we've had over the past few years. So really, they have run their course, and they need to be replaced.
What are you talking about in terms of maintenance issues?
Well, right now, our existing leisure pool, we have had three broken pipes in the past month. They're big challenges for us. We have we've had an excavator in there digging down through the pool deck. And I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but it looks like we will have to dig up a section of the pool to get in there to replace a pipe. So that's just, one large example of issues going on with the current leisure pool. with the lap pool, we've had, you know, different leaking issues over the years.
Mm. So we're talking about wasting water most, yeah?
Oh, correct. I mean, huge amounts of water. So when you, so really we got to make sure that's not happening, as well as when that water leaks out, it undermines the bottom of the pool in that shell and causes that deck to settle. And we believe that could be one of the reasons for these broken pipes is through the water loss, it's eaten away underneath, and then that deck shifted and those pipes just broke.
Yeah. So are the pools open at this point?
We're working to get the lap pool open. I believe, I don't have the date in front of me, but it would be on our website. It's coming up, that leisure pool. Hopefully we can get it open by Memorial Day, but it will really depend on these repairs.
Okay, so the repairs will get you through the summer?
Or? Yeah, well, I mean, ideally, as we go to replace these pools, we're looking to put both the leisure pool and the lap pool down in the area where the current lap pool is. So our hope was that while those pools are under construction, we could keep the leisure pool operational next summer. So, right, we'll just see what happens here with these repairs and the ongoing maintenance. But it would be a shame if we didn't have any aquatics for summer.
Yeah. And, right, any refunds then for people who have bought passes and stuff?
Oh, certainly. We'd take care of anyone for that. Whenever any of our facilities aren't up to par, if someone wants a refund, we'll take care of them.
Okay. So have you put this out to bid yet, or are you still trying to get some input?
We're still getting some input. We had public input session and an open house at the Mark last week. It goes to the Planning Commission again in the beginning of May. So our hope with this is to keep our fingers crossed that we could start this fall.
Yeah. And what have you heard? What's the feedback you've heard from residents so far?
You know, it's interesting. We have a survey out on Engage Park City, and I was just looking at the numbers, and we had 64 surveys completed on the pools, and about 80% of the people were supportive of, or definitely supportive of, our existing plans. So in my mind, whenever we can get 80% of the people right off the bat saying, yeah, we're supportive or definitely supportive, or we're in good shape. So I think there's good public support.
So you haven't had any concern from people concerned that the pools may be too close to each other?
Well, I can't say that, right? We had some comments of concern about the noise. Our current facility has the lap pool away from the leisure pool, and we get people that use that lap pool that may go down there and read or sunbathe and like that it's quieter. From our end, hopefully that will still happen, or we'll have other spaces outside where that could happen for people. It will be with both pools next to one another. It will be, you know, louder probably for all users. But I think also there's some vibrancy, and again, I'll just go back to that it's a recreation center, and it seems like an appropriate place for that.
All right. So can you build pools, though, that don't run into some of these problems that you're talking about? I mean, is there a way to design them so that you can get into them in a case of breakage?
Yeah, certainly the technology has improved over the, you know, 24, 30 years since our last pools. And that's everything from the type of piping that they use to certainly your question there. We'll certainly be investigating that, whether there's a way to sleeve pipes better so that if something did happen, you can, you know, pull them out and put a new one in.
Okay, so in terms of public input for both these projects, where is that going to happen? Just at the meeting level, the Planning Commission?
No, there's a couple of ways. So we have Engage Park City, so engageparkcity.org. You go to that website and you'll see a project there for pools and community center. You can go in there and see the boards and take a survey and get your feedback. We will also be at the Spring Projects open house on May 7th that will be out in the library, and that's from 5 to 6:30 p.m. And then we also have all the boards on display at the Mark. So anybody that comes to the Mark, we have about 12 boards set up in our party room. You can go in and look at those. There's a QR code that you can scan to give your feedback. As well as, I'd say, if you're in there and you have any questions, just ask the front desk, and they'd be happy to get someone from administrative staff that may be able to answer people's questions.
Okay. As we reported, the bubble over the courts is not replaceable. What's the plan to for next winter?
Yeah, so we have working through our insurance company now. We made a decision this week to go with Broadwell Domes, which is as an office in Salt Lake. So we'll be getting a new bubble. It will get all new doors, new skin and all that. So our plan is for that to go up the week of, I think, September 16th. We have it scheduled.
All right. So insurance did cover it. They didn't use it as an act of God and deny you, huh?
No, yeah. Insurance covered it. Luckily, the city had replacement insurance, and we worked through with the insurance company. It took a while, but they ended up declaring it a total loss. So the value of that is, it's going to be, when it's all said and done, probably close to $500,000, because insurance will also cover lost income for us. And we also have some court damage from the lights coming down.
Mm, wow. Okay. We haven't heard much about kind of the conflict between tennis and pickleball players. Has it kind of worked its way out?
Well, that's, I think maybe for the short term, once the weather gets nice, we have more facilities for users in the winter months. We have a real shortage of indoor space, whether you're talking, you know, soccer teams, lacrosse teams, pickleball players, tennis players. So really it is, unfortunately, a winter issue. In the summer, it seems to go away as the weather gets nicer.
Okay. And then you also, once again, put out ice rinks there on the City Park tennis courts. Did those work well this year? Because you did something different this year.
Yeah, this year the ice arena staff moved them to the infield of the softball field instead of the tennis courts. And I think it worked out well. There's a little bit more space there. The rinks were able to be a little bit bigger. And we also didn't have the confines of the snow removal.
All right, so what, you put up like forms and a tarp or something?
Yeah, so there are, you know, we buy a kit, basically a backyard rink kit, that the ice arena puts up, and then we rented a chain link fence to surround it so that they could open it and close it depending on the weather.
Okay. And then with the failure of the bond last year, which would have expanded the mark, will you start trying to budget to do that then?
I think we will eventually. At this point, really, we're focused on the community center and getting the pools done, the bubble. We've got a lot of projects going on. So any of those items that failed in the bond have sort of taken, I don't want to say a back seat, but they're not a priority for us right now.
Yeah, because I was going to ask about Round Valley as well. I mean, any chance to put to set aside some money to put some amenities there, restrooms maybe?
Whereabouts in Round Valley?
Well, wherever you're going to put the Nordic kind of shack.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Heinrich is actually looking at the potential of putting out a facility out there that the Nordic skiers could access in the winter, doing a yurt. So we'll see where that goes. There are restrooms at that trailhead already, as well as the ice arena. But as you know, it's a busy place. We could use some more amenities.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, I appreciate you having me in, and have a great day.
Okay, Ken, thanks for your time.
Yep.
That's Park City Recreation Director Ken Fisher. Well, Summit County's about halfway through flood season, and so far no significant flooding has occurred. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that emergency officials are optimistic about the rest of spring.
The Wasatch Back has seen sporadic warm-ups this spring, punctuated by colder weather and more rain and snow. Summit County Emergency Manager Catherine McMullen says that stair-step pattern is the best-case scenario.
So that's actually been going pretty well for us, even though we've continued to get additional rain. We need the rain, but our systems are handling it very well.
There hasn't been any flooding, she says, but her department is monitoring the reservoir levels.
Last year, our reservoirs were very low, so they could take a lot of runoff water. However, this year, our reservoirs are about 85% full. So we want to be continually monitoring, be extra alert, to make sure that they can handle the runoff that they're receiving.
After the historic 2022-23 snow year, the county set up sandbagging locations and sent weekly situation reports so local municipalities could stay on top of the flooding. This year, that hasn't been necessary, but McMullen says sandbags are still available for residents who want to err on the side of caution.
These big sandbagging machines that we purchased last year, those are ready to go. We have contracts with the sand. We have sandbags available.
She recommends residents call their city first for sandbags, and anyone in unincorporated Summit County should call County Public Works to pick up their free sandbags. McMullen says Summit County's final recorded flood incident last year was in June. This year, Utah still has about 16 inches of water to melt off. SummitCounty.org/flooding is the one-stop shop for information on flood preparedness. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Studio with an update from Mountain Trails Foundation. I have Executive Director Laura Anthony. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you held a board meeting earlier this week and reported on a number of things this past winter, as well as a look ahead at this summer. So let's start with this winter. It sounds like some of the highlights here were we had a nice long season.
Yeah, we did. It came in a little bit later than it sometimes does, and thankfully wasn't quite as robust as it was last year.
Okay, and you also have a new groomer.
We do. Actually, that's the city's groomer, so Mountain Trails crew operates it, but it does belong to the city, and we use it for the Round Valley and Bonanza Flat grooming.
Okay, and then transit to trails, is this the final weekend?
Well, we keep saying that, but as long as the weather keeps cooperating and the track remains alive and groomable, we'll keep doing it. So we think that this is probably the last season. I'm sure that the Mountain Trails crew would love to say it is. They're pretty tired at this point, but we will be doing transit to trails and grooming Bonanza Flat Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Okay, and that people do need to sign up for it, and they can do that on your website?
Correct. Actually, if you go to Transit to Trails Utah Open Lands website, or Park City's website has the link there. And you do need a reservation. I will also add out there that the bike situation is kind of weird. We don't have a single track. Groomed in Round Valley right now. It was too blown up after the winter to bring it back. But you can ride, if it's very cold and you're not leaving a rut, you can ride on the Nordic track up there. However, the bikes in the vans, you have to actually put your bike inside the van, and so it kind of complicates the space in the van. So we're not recommending it at this point. We hope to have bike racks or some solution to that next year, but for now, bikes are a little bit of a complicated deal for transit to trails.
All right, we'll go ride out in Heber.
Right, yeah. The trails are dry out there, for sure.
Yeah. So what are the conditions, at least locally, in terms of any kind of hiking or biking at this point?
Well, so the trails on the mountains still are obviously snow and off limits because the resort is open. Round Valley is kind of hit and miss right now. I wouldn't recommend it for bikes. There's a lot of muddy areas, and we don't want to wreck the trails, so just be kind to trails. If you can get out when it's frozen, like this morning, it's very cold out there, so it's a great time to be out. But just, being careful that if you're leaving, the mud sticking to your heels or wheels, it's time to turn around.
All right. So are you fully staffed then for kind of that annual spring maintenance work?
We are. We are now paying a livable wage, and so we can thank one of our generous donors for making the difference in our budget for that. But we are paying a wage that now attracts our crews to come back year after year. And so we've got a great selection of talent on the crew. We're looking at people we have hired people who are coming back for their third and fourth year in a row. So that really helps with the training, the time it takes to train somebody and get them up and running. We're just going to hit the ground running this year.
Yeah. So when do your crews start getting to some of the lower trail terrain?
We'll be in Round Valley doing an overhaul on the double track. That was a grant that we pulled out of the Summit County RAP Recreation Fund, and we'll be doing, it's a $250,000 project through Round Valley to improve the double track that's out there, which will help with the runoff and the rutting and the problems we're having on the double track, which then impact the winter grooming operations. So it's going to just improve, and I think it'll also change the summer use in that area. So
we saw a lot of that work happen a few years ago where you kind of came in and laid down kind of some road base. And part of that, as I recall Heinrich telling me, that it helped preserve the snow on longer because it was lighter color.
Correct. Yeah. It's a funny thing how that deep, you know, the deep base, the color of the base that's deep in the snow actually does have an impact on the longevity of the tracks. So yeah, we'll be, if you've been up from the Highland Trailhead and you've been up walking toward the interior of the valley, you'll notice that the Grand Valley Express is pretty blown up after the spring runoff. So we've got to get out there and fix that.
Okay, so kind of a plan then to do something differently than what's, I don't know that you have kind of any of those, I don't know what you call them, but
the culverts.
Culverts that you kind of pull the water away from the track trail itself.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be doing, this overhaul is, the overhauls in the past have been kind of a patchwork, and the contractors at the time didn't have quite the plan that Mountain Trails has to do the culverts and, you know, really solve the problem once and for all. So this is a big expenditure, but it is something that'll last for a very, very long time.
Yeah. You also had mentioned the other day about some work being done on kind of a strategic master plan. Can you talk about why that needs to be done?
Yeah, so in the old days, Mountain Trails and the city would just decide that, hey, we want a trail here, we want a trail there. It looks necessary for whatever reason, you know, whether it's flow or safety or, you know, an environmental reason. It fast forward to, you know, the modern era, and we're now held accountable for that which we do. And so the planning department has now insisted that we do a conditional use permit, an administrative conditional use permit for trails. That is a laborious endeavor. So we've worked with the Trails and Open Space Department and the council and the planning department to give us sort of a big picture view. So if we have a 5-year plan, say, or, you know, a plan that looks out into the future, these are the trails we'll need, which the list is very short. We don't feel like there's a lot of trails yet, you know, that still need to be built, but there are some fixes in the trail system that do need to happen. And so having the planning department and the Trails and Open Space Department and the council all on one page so that they know going forward, this is what the plan is for the trail system. And also let me just put in there that the trail system in the Trails Master Plan isn't just single track on the mountain, it's or in Round Valley, it's also the paved pathways. So it's a really comprehensive document. Heinrich's worked really hard on that, and I commend him for his, you know, the brain damage that has caused him. we're looking forward to having that all in place so that once it's voted upon and once it's approved, we know what we can do without having to pull an administrative conditional use permit every single time we want to go scratch the dirt.
And so the idea this would alleviate something like we saw up in Bonanza Flat, where a trail was planned and then it was like, well, wait, no, that's not where we wanted, you know, residents. So this would be agreed on beforehand, before anything's done then.
Yeah, that's not exactly apples to apples, because the stuff in Bonanza Flat was agreed on and it was approved by council, but that's a whole different conversation. but sort of, yes.
Okay, so how close are you to having it done?
Having the Trails Master Plan? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be done around July. It's in Heinrich's court right now, so not to put him on the spot. He is out of town right now. So, he's got the bones of it really well fleshed out, and it's looking good.
All right, well, let's take a look at some of the projects that you do have planned for this year. And it sounds like a lot of them are really just maintenance as opposed to new trails. I mean, let's talk maybe the new trail would be the Bonanza Loop.
Yeah, that's really not a new trail. That's a finish to a 5-year-old project. And when we talk again about the Bonanza Flat conundrum, that Rick is very happy to be putting the finishing touches on that loop. It'll be a bike-friendly loop in Bonanza Flat. It's going to be amazing. It'll connect out to the WOW Trail as well. So there's a lot of connectivity going on there down into the Heber Valley area.
So is that your trail or is that Wasatch Trail Foundation's trail?
The one on Bonanza Flat, the Bonanza Loop, is the city. City and Utah Open Lands own the land. Mountain Trails has simply done the build on that. And there will be trails coming up from the Heber Valley, which we're collaborating with Wasatch Trails Foundation to make a connection between the WOW Trail and the Bonanza Loop. So it's kind of both.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like Mountain Trails will build the trail, loan money to Wasatch Trails Foundation?
Yeah, that one takes a little bit of explaining. So the way the grants work is that the entity, so Wasatch Trails Foundation, writes the grant, gets approval, and they have to spend the money before they can be reimbursed. So in other words, they have to pay the contractor before the state will reimburse them. So we worked with the state and with Wasatch Trails to let Mountain Trails lend them the money so that they can pay us for an invoice, which then they will return the money. So it's kind of a funny roundabout way, but it was good with the state. It's and both of Mountain Trails and Wasatch Trails board of directors are cool with it. So yeah, it's a great way to sort of loophole, but everybody agrees it's legit, and we're going to get this trail done.
Okay, and then there's also going to be a hike only trail from Mid Mountain up to Charlie's 9K.
Yep. We're looking at really helping with some flow there, especially as regards the hikers. So yes, that will be one of the hike only trails. We've also got one that's kind of paralleling the guard road. So that one's on the Huntsman land. That'll be one that is a city initiative. So we'll help with that. But I do want to say that there's also another really fun project coming out of the ground. We're going to connect the bottom of Silver Queen, where it hits Mid Mountain. We're going to take it straight across Mid Mountain and then dump it out so that you can take that downhill bike pressure off of Mid Mountain Trail. And then right in that neck of the woods, there's a trail called the Trestle Trail. It's probably not, you know, probably 10 people in town actually use that trail. But we're going to connect that into a wider route for a historic mine tour, so to say. So we're working with the State Historic Preservation Office, with the Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History. It's a great collaboration that'll take, it'll allow folks who either want to hike up or take the town lift up to get on this trail. It's a hike only trail, and take a tour of the really cool relics we have in town.
Okay. Let's see, we mentioned Mid Mountain Huntsman and mentioned also the Round Valley work.
We do have a Round Valley signage overhaul going on. You'll notice some of the signage for the next little while might be, some of it's new, some of it's old. So keep your eyes peeled. There will be an overhaul there. I do want to say thanks to Live Like Sam Foundation. They're going to be supporting the etiquette messaging for the new signage. So that's really fun collaboration.
All right. Slow the roll. Enjoy the view.
Yeah. Smile and say hi.
Yeah. Regarding that Trestle and Upper Loose Moose reroute, you note that you have UDOT approval. Why does UDOT involved in this?
Yeah, so UDOT is the agency that works for the state, or is the state, and they have to approve. It's related to the grant. So when we wrote the grant, they wanted to know that what we were building with grant money. And it actually comes from a federal level. So this particular grant comes from the federal level to the state level, but still has a lot of the restrictions and the permissions and stuff you have to get for a federal level grant. So it came down through, and because of that, we had to have UDOT approval. And it was kind of a no-brainer. It's already a very heavily impacted area because it's a ski resort, so it was easy, but we did have to cross those T's and dot those I's.
Okay. You put out maps every year. When are those going to be ready?
Rick has promised me they will be ready for distribution by June 1st, so I hope he's listening.
Okay, and you've decided to keep it with two maps. Why is that? You can't get it all on one?
Yeah, we can't. I mean, lucky us. We have a trail system that if we tried to put everything on one map, it would be so small you wouldn't be able to read it. So very fortunate for a two-map product there.
Okay, and of course, the e-bike survey has closed. Has Mountain Trails taken a position on that one way or the other?
Yeah, our position is this. We are not a regulatory or enforcement agency. We simply support the policies made by the city and by local government.
All right. So whatever they do is whatever they do.
Yeah. And we help collect data. We help, pass through messages from the public to the city and the county. We help provide context maybe, but as far as policymaking, that's not our jam. We build, maintain, and protect trails.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any kind of data to show whether or not e-bikes put more wear and tear on a trail? Or
yeah, that's it seems like, unfortunately, like a lot of things in life, there's two camps on that. Some say they don't. Some say they do. I'm going to just leave that one alone, if that's okay.
All right. You've got a trail mixer coming up. When and where is that?
Yeah, May 22nd at the Legacy Lodge. Thank you, Epic Promise, for letting us borrow that space. That's going to be the All Things Trails open house. So we have about 17 agencies, everything from land trusts to other trails organizations to, the Forest Service, so on and so forth. Anything that's regionally... Utah Avalanche Center, for example, anything that has anything to do with trails, they'll be there. It's a really fun event. It's free to the public. There's food. If you are would like a liquid refreshment, please bring your ID and a credit card. There's no cash. That'll be a really fun event. We always look forward to that. It's kind of a regathering of the troops.
All right. And then in terms of volunteer days, do you have any of those planned?
We have, of course, National Trails Day, which is the first Saturday of June every year. Stay tuned, look at our social media and our website. We'll have more information on that as the day grows closer. But we will also have regular trail dig days. I believe that we're putting them on Saturdays this year. We found that the Thursday dig days weren't very well attended. So we'll be doing Saturdays, and I don't remember which Saturday of the month, which it'll be, but again, stay tuned and we'll get that out there for sure.
Okay, and you've set the date for Tour de Seds. I believe it's Sunday, September 8th, kind of a week earlier than what you do.
Yep, that was the week we were trying not to compete with other things in town.
Okay, anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, I do want to mention that this year, Spiro will be uphill only for bikes. So we've, as part of an effort to make a kind of a hike-friendly zone right up out of the village at Park City Mountain, we've, with a generous donation from one of our great donors, we've put in place a bike trail, so seldom seen, to take the downhill pressure off of that area. So that flow trail is a fun trail. But what it also accomplished was taking bikes off of Spiro, which makes that just so much more safe and more fun for the hikers.
So you can ride your bike up Spiro if you still can.
Correct. Yeah. If you've got the gumption, you should go for it. You probably won't be going any faster than the hikers, which is why we left it open to uphill bike traffic and took the bike downhill. So that was a win-win, and we're very appreciative of the folks in this town who share their wealth and make those things happen for us.
Okay. Laura, hey, thanks for your time.
Yeah, great.
Park City Follies, the annual lampoon of all things Park City, opens tonight for another good laugh out loud. Even with the addition of three more performances this year, adding about 1,000 seats, the Follies is all but sold out. Follies co-writer and MC Tom Clyde says a few tickets do remain for the last two performances on May 4th and 5th, and those who really want to see the show, he says, will likely get to get in.
There's a fair amount of turnover. People's plans change, and somebody will have bought four or five tickets and find they can't use them for whatever reason. So there's a wait list, and people ought to call the box office and if they're having a hard time finding tickets, get on the wait list and check that pretty regularly and see how that works out. Also, if you have tickets you're not able to use, please turn them back in because people are trying to get them.
This is Mark Conklin's first year as director of the Follies, although he has been involved for the last decade, both in the band and on stage. When former director Paul Tann stepped aside last year, Conklin agreed to take it on. He didn't make it easy for himself. It's a tech-heavy production, meaning lots of lighting and audio cues, and the band is on a moving platform.
The Egyptian really has done an amazing thing to provide a lot of support for us. So we knew what the show was going to be about, at least the settings were going to be about. So they had more time to think about putting together scenery and props and costumes and things like that.
The Follies is once again presented by years-long supporter, the Park Record, which Clyde says was helpful when they had a hard time selling tickets. With a couple of recent news stories that have Follies written all over them due to the owners of the Park Record filing two lawsuits against their neighbors' so-called menacing dogs, as well as an over-the-boundary line rock wall, Clyde says nothing is off limits.
I think we're not letting that interfere. I think we're pretty much covering it as we see it. And, you know, that broke late enough that it's not a major park show. But there were some tweaks to adjust around it. It's there and certainly part of it.
The Park City Follies runs Thursdays through Sundays, starting tonight through May 5th. You can find the link for tickets and more information online at kpcw.org.